tan breve como el que estamos viendo. Entonces, insisto, esos dos hechos son notorios y son de público conocimiento. También, por supuesto, el vínculo entre el propio crimen organizado local y el propio narcotráfico y los Estados Unidos. Vale la pena decir que, por ejemplo, un ex convicto, un narcotraficante que fue convicto en los Estados Unidos y que se había fugado del país, fue encontrado en Haití, por ejemplo, portando consigo un cartón oficial que le habilitaba el acceso a todos los despachos del Palacio Presidencial, incluso al despacho del mismísimo presidente. Entonces, insisto, hay una serie de conexiones triangulares entre el crimen organizado, el narcotráfico y los Estados Unidos que se han ido organizando, y por supuesto no hace falta ni mencionar la larguísima historia de injerencia norteamericana en la región, sea vía directa, sea a través de golpe de Estado, sea a través de ocupaciones internacionales. Ya llevamos prácticamente un siglo de este tipo de operaciones de parte de los Estados Unidos, y también vías de injerencia, llamémoslo así, indirectas a través de organismos como las Naciones Unidas o como la propia Organización de Estados Americanos, que tienen ahí un predicamento, un poder y una capacidad de tutela realmente enorme, y que, como sabemos, es absolutamente controlada desde el gran Imperio del Norte.
Era el periodista Lautaro Rivara, desde Puerto Príncipe, hablando ante el micrófono de Stalin Montero, de Telesur.
Estás escuchando en Informativo Pacífica.
Te invitamos a que te unas a nuestras redes sociales, por Twitter, en info-pacífica, o por Facebook, bajo el nombre del productor Fernando Velázquez, Informativo Pacífica.
También puedes descargarlo en nuestros archivos en kpfk.org.
Cerramos esta edición especial del Informativo Pacífica con un fragmento de la transcripción de una audiencia del Subcomité sobre Justicia Criminal, Política de Drogas y Recursos Humanos del Comité en Reforma Gubernamental de la Casa de Representantes de Estados Unidos. Esta fue conducida en una sesión del 12 de abril del año 2000. El texto dice: 5 años después de que Estados Unidos interviniera militarmente para restaurar la democracia en Haití y 4,000 millones de dólares después, Haití se ha convertido en el centro de narcotráfico en el Caribe. Hoy el subcomité va a ejercer su responsabilidad de supervisión para evaluar la amenaza actual desde Haití y examinar el fracaso de desperdicio de cientos de millones de dólares de los contribuyentes gastados para reformar el sistema judicial y la Policía Nacional de Haití. Un reciente reporte del Servicio de Investigación Congresional revela que, a pesar de años de ayuda de miles de millones de dólares de asistencia de Estados Unidos a Haití, el país es ahora el mayor punto de transferencia de drogas en el Caribe, facilitando grandes cargamentos de cocaína rumbo a los Estados Unidos. La DEA estima que el año pasado 67 toneladas métricas de cocaína pasaron por Haití, un incremento del 24% comparado con 1998. Haití es ahora responsable del 14% de toda la cocaína que llega a Estados Unidos desde Colombia. Haití es el país más pobre del hemisferio y esa condición lo hace vulnerable a corrupción oficial. Por otro lado, gastamos cientos de millones de dólares de los contribuyentes para reformar su sistema judicial y la Policía Nacional. Debemos preguntar, ¿acaso el dinero y el esfuerzo valió la pena? Ese fue un fragmento de la transcripción de una audiencia del Subcomité sobre Justicia Criminal, Política de Drogas y Recursos Humanos del Comité de Reforma Gubernamental de la Casa de Representantes de Estados Unidos. La sesión tuvo lugar el 12 de abril del año 2000. Así llegamos al final de esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro más profundo agradecimiento a todos los medios y personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Informativo Pacífica.
No te la pierdas.
Because we are the 99%.
El gobierno de Juvenel Moïse era un gobierno extremadamente impopular.
Hay bastante incertidumbre de una posible intervención de potencias extranjeras, ya que, según analistas,
El país recibe con mucha preocupación las declaraciones del presidente de Estados Unidos, Joe Biden.
Ha sido comprobada la infiltración de mercenarios norteamericanos, de ex marines de las propias Fuerzas Armadas de aquel país.
El miércoles por la mañana asesinan a tiros al presidente de Haití, Jovenel Moïse, y hieren gravemente a su esposa, Martine Moïse. De acuerdo a la versión oficial, la pareja fue víctima de un grupo armado que atacó al ejecutivo burlando la seguridad de la residencia presidencial. A continuación tenemos varios reportes y entrevistas en esta edición especial del informativo Pacífica. Te saluda Fernando Velázquez. Quédate con nosotros. Comenzamos con la periodista Aliana Nieves.
Hasta el momento la información no es mucha. Hay que decir que se confirma entonces este atentado contra el presidente de Haití, Jovenel Moïse, un ataque que tuvo lugar en su residencia de Puerto Príncipe y que fue perpetrado por un grupo armado. Esto lo confirmaron las autoridades de la nación caribeña a través de un comunicado que hicieron público. También se supo que la primera dama que acompañaba al presidente también resultó herida, en este caso de bala, y está recibiendo atención médica en estos instantes. Desde los altos cargos de la nación han condenado este ataque, al que han calificado de bárbaro. Han asegurado que está garantizada la continuidad del Estado y han llamado a la calma.
And loitering your way next, with no permit and very little justification, except the subject's interest me, it's the Bathrop Spears Broadside Show. That's on July 8th, 2021. And it's coming your way. What's on it? Well, you have to listen to it to really catch it and get to the details, but we're going to be roaming the benchlands again with the new reports of a benchlands that is continuing to live its day-to-day life in spite of the withdrawal of the protection of the federal courts. And reports from encampments abroad, I should say in different counties anyway, that are facing elimination or relocation to smaller and less desirable and less available locations in Sausalito, in San Rafael, and threatened activity in Novato. So stay tuned and behold.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
And as of July 8th, the Benchlands, the encampment where there are somewhere between 170 and 300 people, depending on who you talk to, there is as yet no move by the city or the county to relocate or delocate people there, although that is happening, as I mentioned before, in other cities. And it's also being prepared for in still more cities. And there was a meeting of the state chapter. I think it was the state chapter. I wasn't invited, so I can't really give you all the details, though I am a member in bad standing, perhaps, of the California Homeless Union. And, of course, I insist on maintaining this kind of nebulous this nebulous description of a position with the Homeless Union, because I hear from one minute that from Council Anthony Prince that I haven't been a member, and I've been expelled, and that I'm no longer a member, and then I'm a suspended member. And then I hear from Keith McHenry, no, you're a member, and from Alicia Cole, I don't know if you're a member or not. So it's a nebulous question, and really doesn't matter. We all continue to work as best we can, whatever organizations and organizational bosses, however they tend to describe us, depict us, jacket us, you know, that's just, we go on, hopefully doing our best to make good on the reasons that we got involved in this whole thing to begin with, this civil rights stuff that a lot of people are in one way or another involved in or have been involved in over the years. So I spoke with Keith McHenry of the Food Not Bombs Santa Cruz chapter and co-founder of Food Not Bombs generally across the world. I guess it was last night. Either last night or the night before. But he was very tired, and he patiently tried to answer some of my questions. And he had just they had a meeting on, I guess it was on, it's either on Tuesday or Wednesday in the afternoon, the union, to talk about what was happening in different places around the state. And I actually got more direct responses from activists on the ground who are in their way more to my liking and perhaps more in touch with the reality than folks in the Zoom meetings or particularly in administrative positions. So let's begin with Keith McHenry's conversation with me and take it from there. Talking to Keith McHenry, it's about 8:20 on July 7th, and Keith, you speak about an endless day, and of course you just came off of a Zoom meeting with Union of the Homeless activists from across the state. How did that go?
Very good. We're trying to put something together.
Any new faces, and what are you trying to put together? And please don't be evasive.
Trying to have like some statewide strategy against all the different crazy things that are going on, like sweeps, redefinition of. There was one of the common themes is this dusk to dawn sweeping, safe sweeping zones for. Oh fuck! I might have got two more other projects before. These safe sleeping zones where you have to pack all your crap up and then come back. And, you know, that seems to be a pattern, and there's a suspicion that that's through the California League of Cities, like maybe the city attorney's office meetings or something. So that's like what we're finding, and we're trying to do statewide actions all at the same time.
Any statewide actions coming up that you're about to announce?
Well, we don't have any exactly plan. We're trying to plan what we were trying to do, like a caravan, and then that didn't happen because there was too much going on. So now we're regrouping, trying to do some other actions.
So when you say too much is going on, what are you talking about?
Well, there was a situation of the eviction of everybody from the boats and all that over in Sausalito, and then there was some more, more sweeps in different cities, things like that.
What cities are you thinking of?
Well, San Diego, Los Angeles, Sacramento, Oakland, Emeryville, Berkeley. Maybe it just was Emeryville, not quite into Berkeley.
What do you hear from San Diego?
Colorado,
What do you hear from Los Angeles and San Diego?
They're just the same. You know, one of the things was they came up with this idea that a giant, huge tent things where you all come in and sleep in, but that's supposed to be the thing, but they're... It meets Boise, but there's almost no space for that. You know, not that many people are in them, and because they would need hundreds of more of them, and it's not really adequate, that kind of stuff. So.
Uh-huh. How long did the call go on for?
Just 2 hours, yeah.
And what was your report from Santa Cruz about?
Oh, we said that they got the new law that... But that starts on the 9th, probably, if anything does happen, that they're definitely using the same tactics that other cities are using. They don't want to dust a sleeping place. I suggested there's a possibility that they would end up using that to, you know, that could clear the camp when they announce that they've got the safe sleeping site. So anyway, that's that.
Do they actually have a safe sleeping site here in Santa Cruz?
Well, when they're going to supposedly make one, which will be, the rumor is that's River Street Garage, you know, like Lot 10, 24 River, but it could be some other place. And they, maybe they really open up the bone yard for 60 people. And
that's the 1220 River Street gravel barbed wire place?
Yeah, so they'll say that and they'll say sleeping and then everything's solved.
Now, you've also been writing, along with Alicia Kuhl, about the Association of Faith Communities' problems with their safe sleeping program, I should say, rather, concerns that people who have been told they can't be a part of that program have passed on to you. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, it's quite frustrating. You know, people just don't qualify, even though, and they're not told why. And then some people are kicked out. And there's been some impression that from just the communications that I've read that people are, like, not, you know, that, the, you know, they need to be married or whatever the hell it is, that there's some kind of religious problem from the actual person who somehow has the power to keep people out. So Alicia, for instance, doesn't qualify. You know, she can't get a place.
She and her partner aren't married.
He just got kicked out of his safe parking place.
Who got kicked out?
Angel did. Because he had a girl, it was his girlfriend would stay with him, and somehow that was a problem. That's the general idea that I got from what happened there. But most commonly, people just don't ever get in.
Now, is this coming from the central management or the individual churches who are part of this?
I think it's mostly the central management. But it's also the whole church board of directors, you know, is very difficult to work with. I got the showers. So today, I was getting the showers for, you know, setting that up for every Friday.
For the benchlands.
The benchlands, and then that fell apart by about 11 o'clock, and then it kind of came back together by 1 o'clock, and then so that's one of the things I got to do tonight is I have to write up a memorandum of understanding to, for a while there we had to get, like, the liability insurance, and it was like, well, I mean, we can get that, we have it, but we to name you an additional insured, we have, you know, it takes forever now because of COVID. It just took months just to get the, you know, even though our liability insurance says it starts in March, we didn't, you know, I started like, you know, usually I just call up and do it and it's done, but this I had to do like something like 25 emails. Over a course of 4 months.
What's the history, Keith, of Association of Faith Communities shower provision in the benchlands?
No, I'll come back to that in a little bit. Okay. They do the showers in a few places, and then they ran a the issue, so we've had to raise money to cover it ourselves, because now it's going to be into this Friday will be the fifth week, within at least 5 weeks, that no showers at the bench lands. So that's been a problem. So I was just down at the bench lands. They did get the trash picked up, thankfully. Mm-hmm. That's a pain in the butt, try to do that. And I wasn't blocked from bringing food down this time. Jeremy didn't do the, like, put the little thing in front of my car telling me I can't deliver, like, cases of food. People are loving all the food.
Anyway, what kind of food did you bring down there?
Well, I get all this stuff from St. Harvest and other places. It's all, like, kind of commodities that doesn't need refrigeration.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, you know, meals at, like, spaghetti oatmeal type things, cracker.
You anticipate that this willingness of Jeremy Leonard, who's the guy who's sort of the city appointed and paid, I don't want to call him the commissar, but he's the, you know, he's the fellow who kind of people go to, and I guess he reports back to the city, and he sees himself as some sort of interim figure, tries to speak for people in the campground, or at least he feels he's speaking, at least if not on their behalf, at least in their interest. Whereas I think the Union of the Homeless, as what at least I've heard at union meetings, doesn't really regard him in that quite that light. But have things gotten better with him?
I don't know. Bruce today lives down there, you know, so that Jeremy called the police on somebody, had them arrested. I don't know what's up with that. So, I mean, he just hasn't been there during the. Seems like he's not. Since the injunction was vacated, he's been down there less. Mostly just to harass me. But that seemed to be the. I don't see him there except for when he comes to the meeting on Friday and stuff like that.
Another concern on Facebook, which I've got no idea how serious it is. When I was down there yesterday interviewing people, I didn't hear much concern about it, is safety of women, instances of rape and sexual harassment. Have any reports on that?
No, that's, I think there's kind of, I've not heard of anybody saying that. I think the person that posted that is just not familiar with the situation that's going on down there. So somebody may have said something. You know, we hear a lot, even people at the line will yell at people saying that they got raped by the person in front of them and stuff like that, and these things, and then it's all, like, very convoluted and crazy. It's not totally clear. I'm sure people do get raped, but the reality is not necessarily in the camp. It's very complicated. You know, it's like, people, it's a lot goes on with all that stuff, so.
So you haven't received credible reports of rape or assault in the last few weeks?
No, not at all. No. Mm-hmm. And I've talked to many women down there, and no women have ever said anything or anything like that. So it's probably, and the person that posted that is new to the scene, and it's a very well-meaning person, but.
This is on Facebook, I guess.
It's not exactly the situation that's, it's misleading. I mean, it's an exaggeration. If it doesn't make sense, I mean, if the solution was everybody, all the women got a hotel room or a house, then that's great. But if the actual comment leaves it to, well, okay, the women be safer by themselves in a dorm room. Well, I don't think so. I think the reason people, in fact, why there's such a high percentage of total people there that are women is because it's safer than doorways and stuff. So I think it's a completely misunderstanding of the reality of the situation.
Any reports of the benchlands getting a closure date or other services being closed down that you're aware of?
Nope, nothing like that. There's no communications with from the city about any plan.
And I know the union has expressed, and I've passed on in my flyers, a series of demands on behalf of at least some of the campers in the benchlands for, one thing you mentioned before, showers, canopies around the electrical area, fire extinguishers, more space. What's become of these demands so far?
Well, they did put a canopy up and a picnic table over by the charging station, so that's really good. I'd say that's probably the biggest thing that's happened.
You were also concerned that where the union was meeting, during one of the meeting times, tables which had been there had disappeared. Have they reappeared? What's been happening with that?
They were not there today, so sometimes there's one table and a canopy, but that's it.
Any reports from the other campground, the fenced off, so-called agreement camp of mostly deported people from, the West?
From Harbor West.
Harbor
I don't West. Know anything about that at all. I mean, they're nice people there. They camp there. And then there's a camp beyond that camp that's just a wildcat camp, you know, that's quite extensive on the other side of the Brentwood 40 Creek.
What do you hear from them?
They're doing good. They are the people that more eat with us because they're already close to us. And then you have all the people on the levee. They're doing pretty good. They're as messy as normal. But.
Butler, at the last city council meeting of the early summer, before they went on vacation, said that on July 1st they would begin clearing the Poganip. Any reports from the Poganip?
No, I haven't heard anybody come down from the Poganip yet, so I don't know what's going on with that.
What about the potential attack on the cemetery campground area, the old Camp Paradise campground, which people from the Hell's Trail retreated to after they were displaced from their structures and their camp along Highway 1?
No, nothing about that.
And
nothing about just the regular ticketing on natural bridges and Delaware overall. Just the regular systematic endless ticketing. So that's.
You're talking about mainly about rough sleepers or about people in vehicles?
People in vehicles. That's the other thing. Then I haven't heard any hotel closures yet recently. That no one still knows anything about that. That should start to happen soon.
Now, is the union still holding its regular meetings with the Benchlands camp on Fridays?
Right. Yeah, we have another big one. We're trying to get people there.
And what time and where will that be?
It's always 5 o'clock at the picnic tables behind on Fridays.
And I understand you have a movie showing coming up?
Yeah, then we're going to show Push, and it's that's on Bastille Day, Wednesday, what's that, 14th, at Tabby Cat, and that is about, the overall policy of big finance to park money in luxury condos and real estate and so on, and with no intention of housing anybody. So, that's a pretty dire situation.
Now, I understand that some activists who are Santa Cruz Community Credit Union people have been petitioning to stop the board of directors of the credit union from selling its building, which the people like Micah Posner and Ron Pomerantz have been opposing. They're longtime community credit folks and part of the potential, liberal potential. Ron ran for city council, didn't make it, and Micah was on the city council, and his liberalism was pretty thin as far as I could see, but he did come out to try to support the camp in December when the police wanted to run them off and so forth. Have you heard any?
Yeah, it's called the Cruise Hotel. It's like a corporation mostly from New York, but also has offices in San Francisco, and they build what they're calling boutique hotels, which is 220 room hotel with a swimming pool on the roof.
So this is what the building that would replace the Santa Cruz Community Credit Union?
Yeah, it would replace that and the parking lot that we're in. It would go up to the corner.
Wow. I mean, I know that these folks who are opposing it with petitions, because apparently the board of directors made this move without consulting the membership, which apparently is what boards of directors do around here. Or...
Well, all things are completely messed up, but that will be part of the subject of the night where we show the movie Push.
Uh-huh.
Let's see what else is going on. Yeah, so we got the... So we're trying to get a Know Your Rights event workshop down in the Benchlands. We've got watch. We're coming up with a declaration of... we're supposed to review Friday. Hopefully it'll be emailed out by Jeb soon. And we're trying to build a larger coalition around to defend the camp and to defend basically the human rights of people living outside. So that kind of stuff, you know.
Now, I heard talking to an activist up in Novato today, Jason, I believe his name is. I think he was on your Zoom call, perhaps. I'm not sure if he made it or not, but he's with the California Homeless Union up there, and he was supporting Robbie Powelson in Sausalito, and they resisted the demolition, as well as the San Rafael demolition that happened yesterday, I guess it was.
Unfortunately, I should probably go. You know, I started working this morning at 3 a.m. And I haven't spent 1 second not.
And you sound like you're about to. Yeah, you're about to collapse. Plus, you need dinner.
I want to eat. I want to actually visit with my girlfriend. And
you selfish dog. Well, thank you very much for talking, Keith. And we'll talk again. Right. Bye bye.
Century, there was a prohibition, which put a heck of a lot of people in a difficult position. Each year, millions went to prison for planting the wrong seeds, imprisoned for the crime of smoking weed. Imprisoned in their millions, especially those black or brown or wearing long hair and hippie clothes. But I stand here before you with quite a bit of pleasure to tell you all about a successful ballot measure. It's legal now. It's legal now. Take a bow. It's legal now. Politicians were useless, almost all the same, playing the military-industrial prison complex game. But the regular people weren't nearly as dumb, so some folks took initiative and we passed a referendum. Now people don't have to risk arrest if they want to treat their ills with something other than pharmaceutical pills. And if you just want to take a hit because you like the feeling, you can safely walk the streets or just stare up at the ceiling. It's legal now. It's legal now. Take a bow. It's legal now. Now that pot's legit, at least in large parts of the West, we can get to work legalizing all the rest. The poppies and the coca leaves and all the other plants, safer, regulated, will be the official stance. The CIA will have to find another way to operate. The FBI will need a new MO for their whole police state. When we legalize it all, from the West Coast to the East, then we can say right here in the belly of the beast, it's legal now. It's legal now. Take a bow.
And that was another one from David Rovick's Oregon Song List. I think he's got a total of 50 songs on there, and you're going to hear some more of them during this netcast, and probably in a few netcasts to come. And now let's turn to the roving video man and union caster, or unionizer, or union activist, Wes White, who is frequently speaker on this show. But he not just does he talk, he also moves around and talks to people who are in the middle of the action, and that's where I found him a couple days ago, and he'll tell you all about it.
Well, let's, let me introduce you here. This is a phone call I'm just receiving from Wes White. Today's July 6th, and it's around 9 in the morning. And Wes, where are you?
Right now I'm in San Rafael.
And
the 4th Street underpass of 101.
And is this your first visit there, or have you been there before?
This is probably my third visit here, at least. I've made some friends. You know, they've kind of are getting displaced right now. So, you know, they're actually wearing union shirts on top of that, which is kind of cool.
Union of the Homeless?
There's a bunch of union folks from Sausalito and Novato supporting, you know, getting people moved and everything.
So this is an encampment under a freeway that you are at?
Correct. It's like two blocks. And honestly, they don't even cover two blocks. They cover maybe three quarters of a block over two blocks. So, even then, I mean, there was, you know, empty parking stalls. So it wasn't like, you know, they were taking up too much space.
How many people would you say are being displaced?
Probably about 20 people.
And what options are they being given, if any?
Well, San Rafael actually has a speakeasy loose connection agreement with Caltrans to let them stay at the most northern parking lot, and so they have two porta potties there. Basically, the whole thing's full. You know, they provide the tent and the cot and the sleeping bag, but you have to maintain all of your possessions inside that tent. And they do have, like I said, a porta potty, and they also have power. They do have power outlets there, but then you're not allowed to have an extension cord. So where the power outlet is in the heat of the sun. And over here, it does get a little second. And plus, there's nothing for any of the elements, but if it rains, you know, and you're only supposed to charge devices of communication, so your phone, your laptop, they're very limited on what they're allowing you to use it for. There is a set of rules. I gotta get that. I don't know, man. Two people did go. Just one gal, Mama Tigress. You know, she's the one with the teepee. I think she just signed this morning to move in there, and they were trying to move stuff in. And then the police came and blocked the entrance from Robbie Powelson from Sausalito coming in. He's actually been very instrumental over there in Sausalito. So when he came over here, you know, just with his truck and helping the haul stuff.
So
they saw it come in, and by the third load, there was all kinds of cops.
So we're talking about people trying to support the encampment that the Caltrans wanted to disperse, or rather,
yes.
And so how many people actually wanted to move to this new location, and how far away was it?
That's a good question. I would imagine maybe two or three people probably moved in there, maybe more. Still another 20 or so people that are not going to go in the thing. Because to be there, you have to take your tent and cot and sleeping bag, but you may not use your own tent. And, because they want to make sure that everything stays inside the tent.
And how big is this area, and how close are people in this new area? Have you seen it yourself?
Yes. Well, the taps are pretty close together. I mean, I don't have a measuring stick or anything like that. I would guess, imagine that the taps are like 10 by 10. They are tall enough to stand in at least. But once you put a cot in there, you know, you don't have much room for your own things.
And how many people have actually moved to that spot, or when you were watching?
Well, my personal knowledge, I only know one person that signed a paper this morning to be able to move her things inside. You know, I would guess, imagine, you know, at least probably two or three people are there that were over, you know, in this place.
Where is it located?
Quick work of it. I thought Caltrans was supposed to supply storage bins or something. I thought they lost a few court battles to where they were required to do certain things.
Well, I know that. I know that.
Right now is excavation and tows.
Well, I know that. I know they lost a lawsuit in 2020 or 2019 over in the Berkeley area, and I know they also reached an understanding with Where Do We Go, the encampment underneath the I-80 next to Berkeley. Is that what it's called, the Seabreeze? Yeah, and I think the lawsuit was essentially a successful lawsuit that won damages for past depredations against homeless encampments. But I think you may well be right that there may have been an injunction requiring certain kinds of behavior. Although I think you talked about it wasn't Caltrans and Salinas that was so much the enemy of the encampments. It was another railroad agency, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
For Salinas, yeah, the Union Pacific. You know, but still, yeah, because they consider that private property. But the Caltrans one in Gilroy, I remember there was a big stink about it, and we blocked them, and they're like, yeah, we know. You know, you can take trash, but you're not supposed to take people's possessions if they're still claiming ownership over it. You know, and right now they're just full throttle, you know, taking everything. And in Gilroy, they actually behaved pretty good. You know, they're like, yeah, I know. And it's the same company, Dillard. It's the same company that was there is here. So I would imagine they're contracted with the city. I mean, with Caltrans, the same way as Fifth and Enright in my town is contracted with the city. They're basically the exclusive excavators.
Well, I would wonder if the lifting of the COVID shelter in place, not so much by the CDC, but by, you know, private
California reopening, yes.
Yeah, is what maybe is motivating the, shall we say, less respect for.
I agree with that, yes.
But I don't, you know, I'm speculating here. Have you gotten any have you talked to any of the officials about what they're doing?
Caltrans, I mean, CHP has been very adamant. I mean, they came in, dude, like 24 deep. And they're still surrounding the block right now. And their main message was stop the Caltrans. And, of course, Caltrans is staying real far away from everybody. Do not be close enough to even ask to come over to talk.
What about the local citizenry that are non-campers? You still there?
There are a lot of supporters. You know, quite a bit of people are taking pictures. Other people have been helping move all morning, and they've been here since 6.
So it's not a hostile crowd generally, except for the people.
There is an awful lot of concern. Most people are pretty well, you know. I mean, I'd say there was probably 6 or 8 people with signs, and a lot of press. You know, I guess independent. And even Vietnam veterans just walking around right now. So I don't know. There's a good, you know, couple dozen supporters as well.
Any mainstream? Has the New York Times showed up yet? Wes, are you there?
I don't know. I can't hear you.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me now? Hello? Can you hear me? How about now?
Shall I try and call you again? Yeah, I'm calling in. Can you hear me?
Yeah. I lost you for about a minute or so.
All right. So you are, of course, doing some video yourself because you are, you know, you're a video man who's been doing a lot of documenting of all kinds of sweeps and resistance action by folks in these encampments throughout the state, particularly in this area, local, well, Central California. Is that accurate?
Correct, yes.
And you mentioned to me a few days ago that you were sort of on a tour of different places to lend solidarity and also provide a sort of an eye and a record of what's going on. Has that been true?
Yes, yeah. I mean, you know, if I can, I've been basically in this north portion of the San Francisco Bay almost all week. You know, it started with Sausalito last week, and then I've just met friends in San Rafael and Novato as well. You know, then they're telling me there's 60 beds for the whole county, you know, and 1,000 on their last point in time count for people outside. So, you know, I mean, it's pretty easy math. They don't got it.
Mm-hmm.
So Novato actually get a lot of declarations and everything else. So I think they're going to get a temporary restraint order going today, tomorrow. I'm not sure, but Friday is the day.
Now, you're at the San Rafael camp right now.
Yeah, because today's Tuesday. Last Monday is when they got Sausalito. So there's a few people from Sausalito here. There's even some clergy and some folks from San Rafael, as well as some folks from Novato. And then Homeless Union from Sausalito and Novato, and we have a couple of shirts here in San Rafael as well.
Now, the Novato camp, does it have a name?
The Novato camp is called Camp Compassion.
Uh-huh. And how many folks were up there when you left it?
There is probably at least 40 or so people there.
And when did you leave it, and how long did you stay there?
I was there last week. There was a farmer's market on the Wednesday, and I think I was there on the Thursday, maybe even the Friday. We went to Chico one day. So I took one of the guys, Daniel, from here at 4th Street Underpass with me, and he's pretty powerful. And then Mama Tiger's here across the street. She's the other gal that, you know, kind of gives a spiritual direction for people. Mm-hmm.
And those two, Daniel and Mama Tiger, if I got that right, I'm not sure,
Tigress.
Thank you, Tigress. They're at the San Rafael King Campment, right?
Yeah, the 4th Street Underpass. And then I hear, so there's people over set up at Ford Park over here, and I hear that the city's passing a new ordinance that's going to make its second reading today, or maybe its first, but an urgency ordinance, so then it goes into effect immediately, which kind of circumvents, I thought, constitutionality. That would go into effect immediately, and underpasses and everywhere else, basically, of city property.
Now, this is a city council or the Board of Supervisors of Marin County?
San Rafael City Council is passing an ordinance tonight, an urgency ordinance. I'm supposed to get a copy. I'll forward it to you. You know, so Boyd Park and other designations, Boyd Park has probably got 15 people in it, plus the 20 that's coming out of here. You know, I mean, they're not supposed to be allowed to be anywhere. So, like, how is that solving? What are you talking about?
Is this pretty much a white encampment, or are there people of color there as well?
There is a couple. Dr. Bombay has been pretty up on it and very vocal. I brought a couple of megaphones. So the Mama Tigers is one of the ones that went in. She's got a megaphone and somebody else got a megaphone. You know, so these people can speak up, and Dr. Bombay has been pretty good at it.
Well, the reason I ask about the racial composition is that Marin County is notoriously white, except where they've herded all the black folks into Marin City, where they have kind of wretched conditions.
That makes sense.
And I mean, I haven't been to Marin County for a while. I used to live there for a period of time in the 80s.
The complexion is pretty light, yes.
So, was there any planned political demonstration? Because I imagine the camp anticipated this San Rafael City Council camping ban, it sounds like.
I'm not sure how well it's known, how many people actually pay attention to the city politics.
What about...
Not
in the encampment, then. I mean, I'm just wondering if encampment leaders had any plans to... I imagine you were preoccupied with the potential eviction, but...
Well, earlier there was something about linking arms around the teepee, but then also his mother Tigerson's teepee, and she already signed up to go in another place. But I'm not sure exactly what's supposed to happen. But that was somewhat planned before, but we didn't do any kind of resistance, really. Like I said, I mean, they came in 2 dozen deep, and, we just backed up.
Was it a function of the number of cops, or was it a function of some deal made between one or two of the campers to move as an attempt to kind of break up the group?
Well, I think, the leadership has been very much like, be nice to the cops, and doing the best we can. Mama Tiger's been pretty, calming the cats more than anything else, right? So, not much resistance. We do have clergy here. We've got our camp leaders from all three cities that are, in close conjunction to each other, about maybe 8 or 10 miles apart, so not even a 20-mile span.
Well, I know the Santa Cruz Homeless Union has been kind of controversial about how and when to resist the attempt to move the San Lorenzo Benchlands campground. When that happened in December, when the court order came through and it was moved into the Benchlands. Now, as far as I know, there's been no move on the Santa Cruz homeless encampment here in the Benchlands as of the 6th of July, although I'm sitting, I'm far removed from the campground. I just haven't heard anything about it. But the union has been, the homeless union at the state level has been saying a lot about the rights of people in these encampments. And occasionally here, we've done some protesting. You may remember we protested the 1220 River Street barbed wire encampment and did a press conference demanding some rights, which had some impact, I think, a couple years ago when this was a tiny kind of concentration camp area that they used to wall off people from a few people from the Ross camp that they dispersed here in Santa Cruz. But I'm just wondering,
And what, in fact, am I wondering? Well, let's take a musical break and come back to that.
In the ranks of the police, this is undoubtedly true. From the USA to Greece, among the most notable cases is the PPP, who kill more black men per capita than any department in the country. But the leader of the vice squad deserves a special mention, even among his fellow cops. He's caused a bit of tension. If he could choose his weapon, it would most surely be a Luger. I'm talking about a marksman by the name of Captain Kruger. But it's not just about the lawsuit back in 2003 that he attacked peaceful protesters with thug brutality. It's not just about his colleague who got tired of his shit. After years of him harassing her, he got promoted and she quit. I mean, that stuff doesn't help, but what really makes the case is how he commemorated members of the so-called master race about his political proclivities. There's been no need to guess since he put up a plaque in honor of the Waffen SS. You can say that it's just speech. You can say that speech is free. But Captain Kruger is a Nazi. He put up
about the quack, though he says that's not what he meant, but I'm not sure what other messages get sent when you memorialize a man for whom mass murder was a game, who had thousands of non-Aryans killed in his name. Kruger sent the city and the Nazi won, lots of money and apology, the right to keep his badge and gun, but it wasn't only that. Got promoted too. Ain't no problem if you want to gas blacks and gays and Jews. You can say that it's just speech. You can say that speech is free. But Captain Kruger is a Nazi. The mayor says he's sorry that he didn't read the settlement he signed, but now he's done the deed. The mayor says he's sorry. Here, have a lien for your bike. Now can we stop complaining about Mr. Third Reich? And please don't call the cop a fascist. He's sensitive about that. Just ignore the swastika on his Nazi hat. Just ignore the swastika. He's not doing too much harm. Just tell us if he starts tattooing numbers on your arm. You can say that it's just speech. You can say that speech is free. But Captain Kruger is a Nazi. You can say that it's just speech. You can say that speech is free. But Captain Kruger is a Nazi.
And that was another Rovick special about his the Portland Police Force, and I guess his hometown, Portland, Oregon. Captain Kruger is a Nazi. And now back to Wes White and a discussion of life, well, both in San Rafael and in Santa Cruz encampments, and what those authorities are trying to do to both of them.
They're... has you seen, is there any position of the union to support resistance in these camps, and is there a desire to rather use more legalistic methods, or is it a combination of both? What's your impression of that? Not just in the, what do we call the San Rafael camp?
It's a 4th Street underpass right here.
Does it have any other name, or is that it?
That's kind of what you know has been referred to as the 4th Street Underpass.
Yeah, and there's Camp Compassion, you say, up in Novato. And I did hear there's an encampment up in Petaluma too, which I haven't, from one of the activists up there. It was written some rather strong, did a strong podcast on it. I keep trying to reach her, but I can't.
She has hard hours to deal with. She works overnight.
Yeah, what is her name again? Do you remember?
Monica.
Yeah, Monica Metella or something like that?
Yes.
So I'm just wondering, is there a pattern here in the... I've been concerned about top-down sort of control of the union situation rather than the union actually representing the feelings and opinions and desires and demands of the people in the camps. And I know I don't want to impose my perspective on what's going on and let my bias, you know, distort the true picture. What's your impression?
It depends on what you're asking, I guess. What I'm trying to do myself in my own little dream of saying I'm making a tour around the state is make friends, identify leaders, and see if they're interested in, whatever this union solidarity type thing. So far, people have been pretty hip to it. The Sausalito one is that resistance you'll be asking for. And we do have, live stream of that. A lot of people did. And, and that actually bolstered a lot of people into saying, yeah, dude, I got to stick up for that. And so now even Sausalito came over here. Novato came over here because they're next. Novato probably does have the best chance right now of being preempted because they're going to do a TRO. So the legal aspect is real as well. We went up to Chico, and Daniel went up to Chico with me, and, he's fired up. And so I guess that's whatever, just selling the union. But at the same time, he's an old-time hippie. And, for him, he's like, I've never been on a team or anything since high school. And he's like 83. So for him to believe in us is pretty huge, I guess.
So what were you?
You're right. But see, that's the thing. I'm identifying leaders, and Daniel's one of those leaders. And for him to come in, and Anthony is pretty happy about that too. And
Anthony Prince, the attorney who successfully, for a while, got that Sausalito injunction, and I guess he wasn't really involved in Chico directly. It was another legal group there, but also, of course, was very deeply involved in the Santa Cruz injunction. Just adding that for our new listeners.
Very well. And the Chico one, you know, they're in Comanche Creek. They're looking to possibly do direct resistance, and that's actually what I pushed for when I was there. You know, and a lot of them seem pretty stoked on it. There was a lot of passion and drive in that meeting, which was fantastic. And, you know, a few of them were DSA, a few of them were organizational, you know, concerns. And then others had, like, podcasts, you know. So they're trying to get the word out the best they can and support the best they can. And that was really the direction of, you know, what can we do was basically why, you know, what they were asking.
Well, I guess what I'm asking you is not whether people on the ground who are actually in the encampment are trying to resist or, you know, or not. I'm interested in that, of course. But whether the national and state leadership and power structure, and perhaps the local power structure, if they're union officials who have been elected in these different places, are more prone to... are they discouraging? Are they encouraging resistance? Are they taking a neutral stance? What's the general situation? Because I've noticed, as you know from our past conversations, that in Santa Cruz it seems that the input to the lawsuit here and the some of the tactical decisions. It's hard for me not to believe that they don't come from, to some extent, from the from Anthony Prince and the, you know, this, you know, he has a central perspective about this. Although, you know, I think Keith McHenry denies that. He says that that's that he makes the, you know, the decision to move to the benchlands, for example, without resisting the move in, I guess, in mid-spring that was done and agreed to by Prince and Alicia Cool. And I don't know if Alicia agreed. I think she must have because she signed on to that lawsuit. And I'm just wondering what your sense is of the leadership's position, whether it is a consistent position in these different encampments or whether it has a position. And by the leadership, I don't mean the real leadership on the ground that you are seeking to find. I mean the nominal union leadership that will decide whether people, for example, get suspended from the union or expelled from the union or admitted to the union and what the kind of so-called union statement is in different areas and hold the national conferences, take people to Washington, yak, 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 all that sort of thing. That's my question to you. What's your sense about that?
That's I'm not even sure. I mean, that kind of went around in a circle. It's fucking, I was shaking the scale too much. Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, you know, those are nuanced kind of thing. And when it comes to money, then we get very selective very quickly.
We being who?
Anyone, everyone. I mean, you know, you're asking about a trip to D.C. or something. They're only going to pick a handful of people.
Well, actually, that was going to be one of my questions, not so much about D.C., but are you getting any funding from the union to do your organizing work as you move through the, as you drive about and do your video work?
No.
And so this is all out of your own pocket.
Somebody else's.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not, it's out of other private donations rather than out of union funding and support. Have you gotten any union funding and support over the last 4 years?
I don't know. I guess so. I mean, you know, I mean, not like a paycheck or anything like that, no.
Well, have you gotten your expenses paid for at any point?
Just traveling out to their events, I guess.
And okay, so, but not in terms of any local organizing.
No, I mean, if they were, I mean, as a policy, that would be way too many people to try to support.
Say that again. What do you mean?
As a policy, if they were going to help if they were going to help a specific city, especially fucking 3,000 miles away or 2,000 miles away, how come they're not helping people closer to them? And wouldn't their immediate neighbor be the first one?
I don't know. If they're a national organization and they hear a particular group is under attack, it would be the group that's under attack that would be the concern. And I imagine that that happens at different times and different places. That would be my thought.
Well, and for instance, the thing is, we're probably going to lose a lot of battles. We may win a few, but the point is the solidarity, I guess, a relationship. And for me, it's a relationship. You know, I'm always trying to find people after they get dispersed, and that's what frustrates me a lot, as well as everybody's safe getting stolen. For the large part, there's nothing anyone can do. I'm looking at them going, fuck, dude, I'm overwhelmed too. What am I going to do? Really, especially when the leadership has already said, stand down, don't worry about it. So how do you push that? Well, you don't. You support them in what they want to do.
I mean, by the leadership, you mean the leadership on the ground, not the national.
Of this 4th Street underpass, yes.
Right. Yeah, no, I understand. I think you have to abide. I think it's wise at least to consider, if not abide by, what the local leadership is doing. They're the ones who, are there on the scene. They're the ones who are most impacted. They're the ones who do the resistance. But I'm talking about if you're coming in as a union member and you're claiming to represent the union, and you do. I mean, I think you are probably more organic and genuine in what you're doing than a lot of folks who wear a T-shirt and don't do anything, or sit at home and broadcast from criticism of the union, like perhaps I do, because you're out there on the streets doing something. Have you made your way up to Eureka? I think you talked about going up there.
I did, but it was 4th of July weekend, so I got there, I think, on Saturday, and basically, there wasn't much going on. It was dead quiet, and then 4th of July was all crazy, but it's also 4th of July, so nobody's working. Or at least that I was, I guess I didn't really go look either.
Did you?
And then on the Monday, I tried again, and a lot of things still start until Tuesday because it is, after all, the North Coast.
Now, did you find any leadership up in Eureka, any encampments?
No, I was kind of, really, I remembered some stuff from earlier. So, I used to live there, and maybe I had my own little bias, but damn it, dude, like about five or seven people were just yelling in the street while they're walking. I mean, just blocking it. I was like, damn, dude, how do I find some coherent people? And that's kind of where I fell back to. Well, I guess I better wait on this other, house, whatever organized people. Off the Facebook page. So I wanted to meet a couple of people off the Facebook page to start with, I guess. And I wasn't able to make contact with them. They were all predisposed. I was sloppy. I didn't make an appointment. So
when were you living in a Eureka area?
I went to Humboldt State in '96 and stayed there until about 2000, I guess.
And when you were up there during those 4 years, was there much of a homeless movement that you saw? Were you all involved in it?
Jerry had just died, so the Further Fest, and so a lot of hippie rainbow people were still going through there. And the identified homeless, Ragman Pete, he just fucking died. I just heard about that a little bit ago. So that kind of sucked. But there were a few locals, and, most everyone else was, transient, I guess. And that was the other thing that kind of fit a little bit more. I'm like, well, where's the people who live here, not just Scraggleberries? I need to hook up with.
You're talking about 1996 through 2000?
Yeah, and all those, I guess, some of the dirty talk actually made itself reality right there, in my first instances, I guess. And I didn't really know where to look, and I guess I didn't really look that hard because it was also somewhat of a vacation because I just ended up hanging out with my friends. I was like, well, if if you know, if I get my message back, then I can do something. But until then, I will just kick back.
Now, were you doing video back then as well?
No, no. Actually, what I was doing then was pushing for a skate park, one of the first skate parks in the state, other than San Diego.
Were you successful?
Yes. Yeah, actually, it was 15th Garden for Children, and my social work professor, who used to be the mayor of Arcata back in 84 or something, and that was actually pretty cool, because those folks actually pushed me to be a lot of, you can resist, you can improve, you can demand.
And for those who have forgotten, or for all you newcomers, Wes White is a video journalist who does a lot of video of homeless events and attempts to pressure politicians into establishing some decent conditions and stopping the attacks on homeless people that taxpayer dollars are funding. You can find that at the John Doe 13K website. Again, first word John, J-O-H-N, second word Doe 13K, and actually that's the YouTube channel, not website. But you get the gist of it. Let's take a musical break now before we plunge on.
Portland is a town that's in the news much of the time. There are a lot of vegans and there's very little crime. It's a nice, safe place to live. Folks ride bicycles a lot. The winters aren't so cold and the summers aren't so hot. They build houses out of cob. They hang out in the park where you needn't worry about walking after dark. There are lots of homeless people, but they don't hurt no one. Just be careful of the boys in blue playing with their guns. Yeah, watch out for the cops. 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 You can hang out with the punks with the piercings and tattoos. You can eat out at a food truck any neighborhood you choose. You can dance to Balkan music while you drink a microbrew, chilling in a gay bar with the mayor and his crew. But be careful what you do, be prepared to get some flack, especially for those who may be male, young, and black. The fact is you do better in Sweet Home Alabama. You're safer there on the old streets of Birmingham. Yeah, watch out for the cops. 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 There are flowers everywhere, but for others they've got prisons with some nice electric chairs. You can go downtown, ride the buses there for free, but you never know when you'll get a DWP. A town full of progressives, but such a rotten bunch of cops. Who knows who'll get shot at the next routine traffic stop? When you live in a place like Portland, where they tend to act this way, you can just join the police force instead of the KKK. Yeah, watch out for the cops. Watch out for the cops. Watch out for the cops.
And that, of course, was Watch Out for the Cops. And now back to Wes White. And again, I remind you, want to watch his videos, go to YouTube and look up John and then the word
well, all crammed together, DOE 13K. That's DOE, then the number 13, and then K. And you'll find his work.
Did you get up to Arcata this time or just to Eureka?
I did go to Arcata, and I hung out at Humboldt State for like half a day. It was basically empty, so I had a whole place to myself. I loved it.
Did you find any actual homeless encampments in Eureka or Arcata?
No. The only one that I was able to hear about as I was leaving was there's an underpass on the Samoa Highway, which is 255, is very short, but it does go over some water, the Arcata Bay, Eureka Bay, whatever, Humboldt Bay. I can't remember now. I think it's Arcata Bay. I guess, you know, they go and they do showers there twice a week, and a needle exchange or harm reduction or whatever.
Did you find much? Andy West, the city police chief here in Santa Cruz, was also Andy Mills. Why am I thinking Andy West? So he was, of course, police chief up in Eureka for a while before he came here. Have you heard any discussion of his tenancy up there, his time there, and his policies there? Because he's become notorious here as the guy who comes on with a liberal smile and indeed seemed to initially have some liberal policies, moving people, directing people to the benchlands rather than to the jail or to the courthouse for tickets. But he has since become more fashionably bourgeois, if you will, or maybe revealed his true colors, and he has come out with this current anti-camping law here in Santa Cruz, as well as six other restrictions on homeless folks that some of us fear will be next on the shitty council, as I call them, their agenda. So I'm just wondering, did you hear much about him up there?
No, not yet. Well, see, and that's just it. I didn't really make a contact, even though I went there. I didn't really make contact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it was also 4th of July weekend, so, you know, it was excusable, I guess, in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So today, after this, I'm planning on going up to Petaluma and then also Santa Rosa, if I can make it.
Mm-hmm.
Monica, again, has, you know, sleepy time. So I'm not sure how long I'll have her available for.
You went to Chico. I've been reading about the Chico extension of the TRO to, I guess, today. I'm not sure what's. I guess it goes back to court today.
Yeah, there's supposed to be a decision sometime this week.
And that, of course, is an injunction that was very strong compared to injunctions, I know in Santa Cruz, but perhaps in Sausalito as well.
Well, and I think the city of Chico administration actually wants to do something, or at least this is what I was, you know, hearing in this meeting. It was loud and there was music, so I couldn't really hear it. But basically, they were saying that the city and county actually want intervention. They want improvement, but they can't look like they actually are trying. Or else they'll lose their base, because it's heavy truck country anywhere in Central Valley.
Did you talk to any people who are on the ground in tents and in campgrounds there?
Yes. Yeah, we did. We did make a stroll through there. And during that meeting, you know, three people came back to that meeting, and they seemed pretty stoked on resisting. They were just worried about support, and you know, there was a lot of house support there already. So it sounds like if the injunction is removed, then there's a good chance for a direct action of sticking and staying. And in their case, it might mean a matter of survival, because where they're at is in the riparian zone, about the only place that there's any trees, and where they want to get, where they're being told that they're supposed to move is adjacent to an airport in the sweltering heat of Chico.
Yeah, I hear it's pretty hot up there. That's what I'm told. So.
Oh, man, no. I mean, you walk outside, dude, my back was dripping. I thought, you know, I was itching, and it was sweat.
Mm-hmm.
you know, not even a minute or two of getting out the car. So, no, it is sweltering. And you do not want to be, I mean, so they were saying that an egg cooks to like 130 degrees. And the when you use a radar gun on the bastard, it actually reads 140. So, and it does, it takes a while, and, you know, the yolk doesn't, it takes longer to cook the yolk.
Ah, so you.
But he said it does cook.
So you're going to have. So you can't really use the sun to cook your eggs at high noon yet.
Not yet. Yeah, right. Well, I guess maybe if you had a magnifying glass on top of that, I don't know exactly.
Yeah. So, Sausalito, you mentioned that, I mean, I've noticed, of course, it's been in the papers and in the Facebook pages that Robbie Powelson was hauled away to jail, and then he was released, and now he's fighting back with court cases.
That had a lot of resistance on that one. Go ahead.
Well, what did you find when you went up there? What struck you most about Sausalito? How would you characterize what was happening there, and what personally did you find that you took away from that whole experience?
I think the community was pretty adamant, you know, that it's insufficient what's happening and it's wrong, you know, and I think the relationship, it just showed a lot of love. Robbie is definitely someone a lot of people look up to, and, you know, I guess when he talks, man, he's a little bit of a preacher man, and then his counterpart would be Jeff. That dude is a rabbi. So between the two of them, you know, they got two cliques going on, and that actually seems to bring a lot of people together. You know, I mean, they're willing to sacrifice, and that is the hugest thing of all. Just that you're willing to put your life on the line for it, you know. And Robbie's really been doing a lot of that, and that's actually gotten a lot of people to, you know, have a lot more community from it. And then bolster them to also be like, well, I can do my part too, you know. And it's a selflessness, I think, that's awesome about it.
Well, I noticed the injunction was lifted because the claim apparently was effectively disputed by the city that the site that people were being moved to, and I guess in both Sausalito and San Rafael. And I don't know about Novato. I mean, you could tell me about that, too. They're using this, oh, we have a place for these folks. Don't you worry. Chico has a similar claim, although... Yeah.
Novato has no such replacement. Marin Ship is not as many people as they displaced. So there's that. And now the Marin Ship is over capacity, and they won't allow anyone else to come in.
Marin Ship is the Sausalito move zone.
Yes, the relocation. Mm-hmm. And when their other contentions was the air particles, the fiberglass from the boat crushing, which the city came up with their own data. So you know, I don't know how much I really trust it. And yet they still don't allow more people. So the capacity question is still one of the most major problems. And, you know, what are you going to do? I saw folks that won't go there, you know, just because it's only 12 by 12. There's as much space as you get.
One of the issues that I raise myself, or at least comes to my mind here in Santa Cruz, is... and I've been pressing the union about this seemingly without much success, is for a citywide injunction against the treatment of homeless folks here, given the lack of shelter and the history of bad faith on the part of the city in claiming it has alternate places for people to go, and then immediately either closing them down or there's just simply being false claims to begin with. And the idea being that Chico, you know, is a guiding light in some way, that it established not just a protect camp, what was it called? The Comanche Creek Camp, I think that's what they called it.
Yes, in Chico, yes.
And that
there's about 100 people there.
And so not only just going after to protect that camp, but to protect homeless people all over the city from the ravages of the anti-homeless camping laws that I think are being pushed by a rather militant right-wing pressure group there. At least that's my impression reading their local newspaper when I can, you know, get it online before it disappears. They insist you pay for everything that you read unless you can move fast enough on your internet. So I guess I'm wondering, in Sausalito, there was a successful injunction that Anthony Prince put together, I guess pretty fast, or I'm not sure about what the time frame was, but seemed pretty fast, but what do I know? But then it was lifted based upon what you were saying. No, it's not toxic, the bar they're sending them. You know, it's got the services that are required.
And it's still not to capacity, so that's the part. And even here in San Rafael, I asked them the same question, you know, because while they were blocking anyone from coming in, because they want you to sign this agreement first, and until you sign it, they don't want to allow you entrance. And this guy almost jaywalked himself right into an accident. He wasn't looking, but he's staring at her like, she's crazy. So over here, man, you get a tent, you get a cot, and you get a sleeping bag. Now the tent looks like it might be 10 by 10, but that's all, so what he was doing was unloading stuff from the underpass to the new location where they said you're allowed to go. Well, now you're not allowed to go there. And if you come there, then you can only really bring one bag.
So we've been talking now for about half an hour. Has anything changed or happened? I should ask you, where are you standing with respect to all this activity in San Rafael?
I'm just up the 4th Street underpass. They're clearing the south side. The dumpsters aren't coming back quick enough, so Dillard and Company is not being as efficient as they could be. Maybe they needed a third or fourth. Actually, I think it might even be a Caltrans truck. So they only had two, and both of those two are gone. So they're everyone's just standing around getting paid to do what? You know? I mean, who pays for it? Human suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And legalized theft.
How's the temperature up there?
I'm in the sun at the moment, but that's only because I've been, wearing a shirt ever since 6 in the morning. And since I've been talking to you, I've been in the sun, in and out. Temperature is probably about, 80 degrees something, 70, 75.
I guess I was going to ask you before, in Sausalito, since that has the same attorney involved as we have here, Anthony Prince, and that's the Union of the Homeless attorney. Has there been any talk? Have you had any conversations with him, or have you had heard anything about responding with a follow-up legal action on the dissolution of the prior injunction?
I don't know. That would be a Robbie question.
Hmm.
For Sausalito, you're talking about, right?
Correct.
Yeah. I kind of feel like everyone's lost their energy on that, although, for that carnage, I mean, like there was massive energy spent on that day, being frustrated, protesting. I mean, there was a lot of direct resistance on that, and that's what was cool.
And this was what last week we're talking about, right?
Yeah, last week. And it inspired people. It did. People in Nevada are like, damn, dude, that's what we got to do. And I guess that's another reason why some folks from Nevada are here as well. Leah is the named plaintiff, and Jason Starris has been, and see there again. Him and Jason and Robbie have been very vocal about this for a while, which is why I guess they get to be the ones to be pointed out. But they're also risking their life and their life on paper for getting arrested or anything. Robbie he got arrested the other time for putting a tent on City Hall, mm-hmm. and then they dropped it because it was demurred. So likely, even though they arrested him that morning, they're not gonna. They're not going to press charges. And there was so much resistance that they decided they weren't going to arrest anyone. They just hauled them out, and picked them up and removed them forcibly, but didn't charge them.
That sounds unconstitutional.
Right?
I mean, it's most profoundly unconstitutional in that you have to have a probable cause to, they had to have something.
You have to lay your hands on them, otherwise realize it's already assault right there as battery.
I mean, here in Santa Cruz, you know, they can cook up some law, and I imagine if they're challenged, they probably will, or maybe they'll just ignore it since, you know, they'll pay off a lawsuit two or three years down the road.
They're dancing right now. They're hanging out the teepee. I think they're they might be poising to lock arms.
Oh, you want to want to walk closer and find out, or are you blocked from doing that?
Well, I think Caltrans is gonna complete one block before they move on to the next.
Hmm.
So, like I said, I mean, really, it's the dumpsters that's taking their sweet time. Looks like one's rolling back right now. Yeah, it's the Caltrans dump truck. Dillard and Company is the one that is the service, environmental services.
Mm-hmm. Destroying the homeless environment. I gotcha.
Yeah, they're the ones lifting and dumping, and then Caltrans is the one doing the dump run. CHP making sure nobody disturbs the operation.
So, what are your next planned stops on your tour of the devastation?
Well, right now it's going to be Petaluma and Santa Rosa. I'm going to try to, you know, and maybe even go back up to Eureka. But I'm going to try to cut off the 101 line, so that way I only get to focus on the 599 line. And then I still got the south side of the state. I mean, I've been here for, a week or maybe? I mean, you know, I plan on staying here until Friday or Saturday.
You intend to be...
I'm going to try to hit everything along 101 before that.
Do you intend to be going over to Marysville?
Yeah, it's next week, probably Saturday or later.
I gotcha. Well, I'm a... poke my nose in and see what you're doing again if you're of a mind to talk about it.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I'm very, very interested and curious in seeing how we can resolve issue over there in Marysville. You know, Brian's case is still talked about a lot. Everything about what Brian did is still talked about a lot. So, you know, it would be good.
We're talking about Brian Brown. Who talks about it a lot?
Well, in Chico, Marysville was mentioned often.
Huh. And do you have any indication? Have folks generally accepted the? I guess they haven't moved yet from Chico because England, the judge is not. I guess today he'll be deciding what the ruling is on the dissolution of the TRO if he dissolves it.
Right. Yeah. Sometime this week. I mean, I did not be told a date. From what I understand, it was told, that it would be done sometime next week, you know, last week.
And have many people, hey, there was a hearing on Friday, and he postponed it till Tuesday, according to the local paper. In Sausalito, most folks moved to that new encampment?
Half of the people fit in. So not most, less than most.
And were they just dispersed around town, or they, you know, swam?
Yeah, street terrorism all over the place now. Absolutely. Yeah, wherever you go, you're not allowed to be there either.
Of course.
So.
Well, I guess I'll leave it there for now, unless there's more you think that anything. Is there anything that we haven't covered that you'd like to talk about?
Up, man, the CHP was very adamant, the lead officer was very adamant about, you know, making the first person they found move. And that dude was not ready to go. In fact, he was hardly woke up. So Jason advocated hard for, like, why don't you just try somewhere else right now? You know, why don't you just move on? No, it has to be this one now. You got to go now. Just take the important things and go. And, you know, he's like, no, dude, come on. You can't do that. You got to let him... You know, we'll help, and why don't you just move on to a different spot first? You know, I'm saying this one, there's plenty of abandoned other properties, you know, and he won. So then, shortly after, the change factor came into effect and hauled everything away, even after the CHP drove everyone to the sidewalk, where the dumpsters had to load up, So, for us, we know the safest place for you is right here on the sidewalk. Well, where do they want to put their dump truck? Right in 2 feet in front of our space, and then they're like, oh, he's going to back up, you got to get out the way. Oh, he's going to scoot up, you got to get out the way. No matter what, man, you got to get out the way. And it's like, okay, you're going to put us in harm's way, but yeah, you know the safe place for us on the sidewalk. Fuck you. For all that time wasted and everything, just so they could establish a perimeter and so they could feel safe, not for us to feel safe, but so they could feel safe. There were still two people, so now there's all kind of bike, which is against livelihood. So there's all kinds of bike, and luckily we were able to save most of his business.
Gotcha.
And so he's very happy, so there's about a half a dozen people kicking it right around him, and they're conversating, and Robbie's truck has been extremely instrumental because he's about the only person with a vehicle, that's licensed and insured, because that's the first thing that happens. He's been a hero, really. Jason ain't got a vehicle. Well, he does, but it's not like a big fire that you can haul through.
So the first guy didn't have to move, or he only moved to get out of the way of the dump trucks or whatever?
His stuff is just now starting to become mixed.
I see.
So, they've been removing loads and loads and loads. For the last hour, I guess.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'm going to leave it there, and I will get back to you, or you can get back to me if you have some more reports you think that we should know about here in Santa Cruz.
All right. Okay, yeah, well, we'll be holding it down. There may or may not be a linking of arms to protect the teepee. Mama Tiger says teepee. There is some music, there's some dancing, they're just enjoying themselves, and half of this block is gone right now, but after the south portion of the underpass is gone, they'll be moving in a northerly direction, and the TP is fixed. So I don't know if I'll be able to tell you anything, because if it's happening, it'll be happening. I can't talk to you if it's happening.
I gotcha. And now, perhaps somewhat abruptly, that's all we have from Wes White, but here's some more music from David Rovix. I think I played this song before, but it bears playing again.
Jacob Blake was walking to his SUV. Alton Sterling was selling DVDs. Eric Garner had just broken up a fight. Breonna Taylor was asleep in the middle of the night. Tamir Rice was playing in the park. Elijah McLean was out walking after dark. Dominique Clayton was sleeping in her bed, where she was shot by a cop in the back of her head. Say their names. Say their names. Driving to a store, Betty Jones was answering her door. Philando Castile was driving home with his girlfriend. Anthony Hill was naked on the grass when he met his end. Ansel Ford was walking in his neighborhood. Michael Brown was blown away just standing where he stood. Kendra James was shot to death at a traffic stop by yet another unaccountable killer cop. Say their names. Jefferson was playing a video game with her little nephew, gunned down just the same. Oscar Grant was celebrating the new year, handcuffed when the shots rang out that everyone could hear. Eric Reason pulled into a parking spot not long after that was when he was shot. George Floyd was just shopping in a store. Micah Xavier Johnson thought he was still at war. Say their names. Say their names.
And that, of course, was say their names. And now let's go to the few folks in the benchlands who were, well, I encountered them as I made my way through it on the 7th. And here's some of my observations and some of theirs.
Mellow and pleasant today, although the sun is out. I'd say it's in the 70s or... And various things grow.
Fence that was around it is gone.
We have a report of a dumpster fire on the beach. When did this happen?
Last night.
How about in the camp? Anything happening here?
Our piano went up in flames.
No.
Yeah. Mind if I sit down? So bright, it caught on fire. And that was the end of that. Poor thing.
I see.
When I got here, I thought it was pallet, and then I realized, what happened to the piano?
In the campground, the San Lorenzo Upper Campground, which existed for, well, 6 or 7 months before the camp was forced to move, well, actually it was longer than that, by a modified court order down into the benchlands itself. And I remember the last I saw of that campground was this piano that had been at the encampment. I think it was right next to the Cooper encampment, if any of you are familiar with Cooper's encampment, which was on the closest to the courthouse side of the camp, furthest away from the children's playground. And apparently the piano had been moved back down into the benchland since and was providing musical, maybe instruction, maybe entertainment, maybe you know, who knows what else, and apparently caught fire.
Oh, it's not here.
I just noticed now when you said that.
Was on fire. I was wondering why I kept smelling plastic, and I was way down there. The fire truck never came.
I mean, I saw the piano leaving the old campground like 3 months ago or 4 months ago, but did it ever make its way down here?
Yeah, it's right over there.
Huh.
And they were playing, people were playing it the last few days, and then just like Wes said, it caught fire. I didn't even know that happened, but there's a big pile of dirt and ash right there.
Was there much of a 4th of July here?
Oh, yeah, man. Fireworks going off everywhere, man. It was exciting.
In the camp as well, or?
What?
In the camp, or?
Everywhere. Sucks.
4th of July in Santa Cruz blows wads. They don't light up. No fireworks here. It sucks, because you can't even see the Capitola ones from West Cliff. I'm telling you, I'm from Wisconsin, and our fireworks blow Santa Cruz away. Our 4th of July, our whole beach is full of people partying, pit fires, and yeah.
Did you guys have sparklers at least?
Nope. No, too much of a fire hazard.
Yep.
Besides, you could put someone die out.
Reports of rape in the camp, how true?
There are a lot of men out here that are predators.
The guy was willing.
And they do not care about women, and they will hurt them and abuse them.
So he got raped.
Say that again.
I said that, yeah, the guy, you know, was forced, and he's ashamed of it.
Frequently? How many incidents of this you know of in the since you've been here?
I wasn't counting. I don't know.
Does it happen every week, every night, every month?
Actually, it's like couples fighting.
The violence against people here toward each other is increasing because of their lack of resources. Because we don't have housing. This is inadequate housing. This is ridiculous. You know, and then they complain about our messes and this and that. And like, we're in survival mode, you know, barely eating, and people laugh at us because our clothes are dirty. You know, it's just disgusting, and we don't have no shower. Our fingernails are dirty all the time. This is just pathetic. Americans should take care of Americans. My father fought in Vietnam, you know, just because I had lacked some skills for the finances to have a home. It's bullshit. Pardon my language.
Sure. Russell, any of your thoughts?
My girl died from exposure.
My thought is it was a very beautiful 4th of July, and I enjoyed it.
All right. Good.
It was a good thing.
And we've also been talking with... You want to say?
Troy.
Thanks, Troy.
Russell, the love muscle.
Russell, the love muscle. All right, I'm going to leave it there. Russell, here's my latest flyer. I think I gave one to Troy, but if you want one, additional one, in case you have to. Just my ideas. You got to figure out if you think they make any sense.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, man.
in the tent with the red flag if you ever want to chat with him. Looking around the camp is Jeremy, who is the city-appointed and presumably city-paid, maybe county-paid employee, who holds weekly meetings Thursdays at 5 here.
You like a flyer.
How's it going?
Yeah. All right. Take care.
Memorial to one of the people who died here recently. It's got a couple of bottles of tequila.
What's that?
His name is Leland.
Oh, yeah, Leland.
Leland, that's right. I'd heard that name before.
Yeah, he died.
Anybody, you want to say anything about him? Did you know him very well or have any sense of anyone say anything for the...
Yeah, he was a good guy, you know. I did know him, you know, and he was always respectful and respected in the community here. So, yeah, and this incident, you know, sent ripples throughout the community here, which we've been dealing with. You know.
What did he die of?
I'd rather not say, but you can ask around.
How long has he been gone?
A couple of weeks now.
And how long was he here before, do you know?
Since the beginning of the camp, I believe. Uh-huh. Yeah, so whenever that was, yeah, a couple months. So he was definitely a part of the community, and, you know, he's missed by a lot of people around here, so.
It'll go out. Thank you, Jeremy.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I thought it was nice.
Leland was in a coma for a couple of days, according to Jeremy, and apparently died. Although, this again, we're talking second and third-hand information, so... That's what we got here. Is where do you go?
When are they going to utilize the fields that have been abandoned for years and the homeless stay there? Select homeless. Ones that won't pile up trash. Keep their area clean. When will they do that? Pretty much, when will they get the head out of their ass and do something for real? A real solution. Instead of stay here for a few months, then you got to go.
Have you gotten any word that they're making moves on the camp yet?
Supposedly, I heard September.
Oh, it's something about Wednesday.
I heard the Army moving on in September, too, so I don't know if they're doing
it. Well, the National Guard can take that Army back whenever it wants.
Exactly.
And what are you going to do? You have to follow the orders of the military and the federal government. And the governor. When's the city going to utilize the fields? I work for DST. Okay, I see fields open that have been open for years.
Sorry.
Abandoned.
This isn't video. It's audio.
What are they going to do? When are they going to utilize them and grow a brain and utilize those?
Obviously, a very good question. Probably when people make them do it, you know.
They're spending millions of dollars for us down here, and they're going to move us out. Waste of money. Why don't they invest in those micro homes that the guy builds and move us to a field, one individually, to per person, and do something like that, or even tents?
Is a homeless union doing anything about that, you know?
I haven't heard anything from the homeless union. Not one iota.
Do you think people would be willing to engage in protests or demonstrations in that way?
What good would it do?
That I don't know.
What good has it ever done? People yelling and screaming doesn't really do any good, does it?
Well, you sound like you make a lot of sense, and I think what you say a lot of people agree with. So.
The city hears you, and then it goes out the other ear.
Yeah.
The county hears you, and it goes out the other ear. Temporary solution?
I guess you're just kissing my
head. Where's the permanent solution? Where's the housing?
I hate to think what they regard as a permanent.
Mm-hmm. Where does the housing matter if they're not doing anything? Section 8 is closed. All that housing is closed. What about these big apartment complexes that are going up downtown?
Exactly.
And over there. I mean, tents aren't homes.
Not
to
really.
Some of us, to some people, they are. But where's the solution?
That is a false statement.
How many fields are around Santa Cruz that aren't being used that the city can get and
provide for the homeless.
Yep. Or empty lots.
Tiny homes. Yeah, tiny homes, like the one down on Soquel, on the corner of the levee and Soquel. Those little tiny, they can fit one person in there, no problem. If the city would fund that, that would be a permanent solution to some people.
I got mine growing here.
But where's the ultimate solution? The city doesn't know because the city's not thinking. Listen to the homeless, not to a bureaucrat.
And I would also say, keep raising your voices louder and louder until they can't do anything but hear you, you know.
Listen to a homeless man for solutions, not a bureaucrat, because they don't know jack shit about being homeless. Let them come out here and live 1 month homeless and find out, in the same situation, no credit cards, they have to earn their cash by canning, working for Downtown Streets Team, whatever, but they cannot go to the bank and just pull money out.
Exactly.
Let them live for a month and they won't make it. They'll run home with the tails between their legs, screaming and crying.
Thank you.
Because they have a home to run home to.
Yeah, because they don't know jack shit and they're trying to make decisions for us. Listen to the homeless bureaucrats. Don't listen to your own right wing bureaucratic bullshit.
I agree.
There's plenty of spaces that you can open up. The field over on Ocean Street, that's been there for how many years? 20 years?
Ocean and...
Just Ocean Street. It's right there. You see it. It has the fucking wire fence, that chain link fence, and it's...
Ocean, are we talking about ocean and water, or...?
No, it's right there on Ocean Street. It's the big field. You can fit 50 people in there.
I'm just not sure which one you mean, because I'm...
Take a walk down Ocean Street, and you'll see it in chain
link. Which direction, right?
It's just like it's next to Togo Sandwiches, if I remember right. That big field. All they have to do is do that.
Huh.
And save some money for the economy here in Santa Cruz.
Oh, but it would alarm the nearby businesses.
Yeah, it would. But how about instead of spending tens of thousands of dollars, hire a couple of monitors, a few monitors, give them a good wage to monitor. No hanging out. Hello.
And more on this in a moment, but let's have one of our last musical breaks in this, the short Thursday show.
I was at home with the kids when I woke up at 5 a.m. Looked at the news in time to hear the pundits condemn the actions of the arsonists who express so many desires. When they made a barricade, set the FOP on fire. It happened in North Portland on the 51st consecutive night of demonstrations in this city, in this epic fight between those who defend the inequities of the empire and those with a vision for the future that starts with the FOP on fire. Between those who like to fumigate Portland's lovely streets, who prefer to use chemical weapons when they're not wearing those white sheets, or the ones who do Nazi cosplay like some of the cops they hire, just up until the night they set the FOP on fire. The cops drive in from the suburbs each day that they come down to defend the interests of the rich, such as the mayor of this town. And Mayor Ted loves his tear gas, though he might say I'm a liar, but not the folks who last night set the FOP on fire. Let's remember Aaron Campbell, let's remember Kendra James, let's remember Alonzo Tucker, say their names. Let's remember the many killers
in this progressive shire. As the smoke rolls up behind them with the FOP on fire.
And, of course, FOP is the Fraternity of Police. And, indeed, demonstrators did set the FOP on fire, though, as far as I know, no one was injured. But I guess they were a bit tired of police behavior in Portland toward demonstrators, the general population, particularly toward black folks. And the Portland protests, though reduced in numbers, are not going away, even according to so stodgy and shitlib a publication as the New York Times in a July issue. But anyway, let's get back to the Benchlands. That's where we live, or at least we live nearby.
What? A $5 sign. No hanging out, no loitering in front.
Be good if they gave the downtown street team a good wage, wouldn't it?
If the downtown streets team went in and got involved, we're about the trash, the needles, and changing the perception of homelessness one cigarette butt at a time. And we've been doing that.
I'm the manager for the downtown streets team.
But and, you get a good wage.
No, I don't get a good wage.
Well, obviously, that's the problem.
It's volunteer. It's volunteer and we're paid by stipends. But you know what? That doesn't matter. We want to change the perception of homelessness.
You don't want to get paid
this stuff. One cigarette butt at a time, one syringe at a time. Mm-hmm. There's a shout out by the wharf team for the beach crew that I run because I'm a green shirt for the beach crew. DST, I think what did it say? DST, you guys rock? Because we were out there picking up that trash without hesitation. I found 3 broken bottles on the ground in the sand.
And, you know, to my shame, perhaps, gutless as I felt at the time, this is a group of about 6 or 7 different guys all sitting around in under a canopy in one of the Benchlands kind of combo tents, tent on one side, tent on the other, canopy between them and a lot of comfortable chairs, which folks were sitting in, perhaps a sofa, I don't know. What I often do on one-to-one conversations when this comes up is I say, do they listen to the downtown street team? In the sense that do your recommendations ever impact policy? Because it doesn't sound like from the anger and annoyance in the voices of the various people who've spoken. I guess the principal speaker is a member of the downtown streets team. Sitting next to him was the guy who says he's the coordinator of the downtown streets team. And that I didn't raise at this issue, essentially telling myself I was letting them speak. But I think a certain amount of it was timidity on my part, possibly. We'll see if I can buck up and deal with this in my next encounter.
If a child would have run through that, or anybody with bare feet, you would have been done. End of vacation, bye, you're going to the hospital. I found a syringe feet from the beach day camp thing. They're playing wiffle ball bat, baseball on the beach. Feet from them, in their bare feet, a needle sticking up in the ground.
How many folks are in the DST?
We have about 35 members right now.
And we actually need more territory. Santa Cruz isn't just these few places. North County, Emmeline, Beach, downtown, Harvey West. It's not just that. Santa Cruz is Soquel, Water Street, the Levee.
Oh my God.
We got the Levee, but we need the city to contract with DST so we can go over there, pick up those needles,
Bubba, come here.
Pick up that garbage, get rid of all that filth,
let us do Beach Street instead of the city or the beach workers.
What would be a fair wage for the downtown street team if you're getting paid what you need to be paid?
We're not looking for pay. We love this place. We're not looking for payment. We're not looking for a salary or a wage. We're happy to do it.
It might be helpful if you got some money for to pay a rent somewhere, although the rents here are ridiculous.
They help us get our GA, so we get that. We also, a basic worker makes about $400 a month rewarded in stipends, basic needs stipends. Yeah.
But you know what?
It does help a lot. It's better than what we used to get, which is nothing.
There is way more. There is way more that those ladies at DST do for us that super way far supersedes any payment that can ever happen to
them. For example,
people who work for
birth certificates, birth certificates, social security cards, identification cards, references for jobs, referrals for jobs, job availabilities, grants to go to school to get jobs. Those ladies, Kate, Melissa, Genevieve, even Tommy, they bend over backwards to help us.
Everybody that works for DST is pretty satisfied with the rewards we get. They're so kind to us, and they help us in any means necessary.
They are angels in disguise.
And we've been talking with, you want to say?
My name's Thomas Paul. I'm a green shirt downtown streets team.
And my name is Michael Powell, manager for downtown streets team.
And I'm Robert Norris. I do a little netcast twice a week.
Thank you for what you do.
Thank you. Thanks for sharing your thoughts.
Thank you.
And I'll give you a card if I have one. Let me take a look. An encampment. Between two tents, there's a canopy and about six folks, mixed men and women, mostly men, relaxing in chairs, talking. Porta potty on the trail above the camp. That's nearest the Boca courts. It used to be where the old Cooper campground was, as I call it. Has no soap and no toilet paper, but otherwise looks okay. So I'm talking with a guy who's on the, I guess this is the bike path or this is the park path above the benchlands.
Yeah,
and we're talking with.
Hi, my name's CJ.
And you say you feel sorry to see these many tents?
Yes. Because they just tells me there's a lot of people on the street that needs help.
But at least you see it, whereas it's not hiding away somewhere, right?
Yeah. Yep.
But, and also the weather is unseasonably cool right now, which is nice.
Yep. It is.
Once it heats up, it's not going to be so nice.
Yep. That's right.
You indoors or outdoors?
Well, I'm in the process of getting housing. Right now.
I've heard that so many times. How much in the process? How close?
No, there's people working with us right now.
And how long have you been seeking housing?
Well, I've been seeking housing this time for only past month.
Huh. And you think it's likely to happen soon?
Of course.
And are we talking about a palatial suite, possibly, at the Paradox Hotel?
I'm not sure about all that, but whatever I get, I'll be happy to get it. If it's affordable, I'll take it. But hopefully,
it is. Where was your last lodging?
Merced.
Wow. And
I lived in there. I lived in Merced for almost 5.5 years.
And what? When did you leave?
2018.
And why did you leave that beautiful Merced?
Well, because too much violence. In Merced.
Really?
There was way too much violence in Merced, so I had to come back here.
Was it violence against people outside mostly, or violence generally? Or
generally.
And when you came...
Shootings. A lot of shootings. Mm-hmm. A lot of people getting hurt. There's a lot of bad things going on in Merced I didn't care for, so I had to come back.
And so you were here before as a...
Of course I was.
Because I think you probably recognized me from olden times.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do you remember any conversations we had or any, do you have any sharp positive or negative memories of your previous encounters with the man with the microphone?
No, not at all.
Just wondering.
You've always been nice to me, man.
Well, I mean, why wouldn't I be?
Yeah, we all saw eye to eye, so I'm still the same person you met years ago. I haven't changed much. I'm just older.
You know, I can't tell if you're older because you're well bundled up and you have this black this uncharacteristic black mask on. Most people aren't wearing them. And that's the rest of you and the rest of me.
I'm trying to say cool.
Well, it's
warm.
It is. It can, hopefully won't get too much warmer.
Yeah.
Have you been out? So you are outside at the moment, though.
No, I'm in a motel right now. That's been taken over by the city.
Project Room Key thing?
Yeah. So it's like a shelter right now. I've been there a little bit over a year. And soon to be out of here real soon. So I'm looking forward to it.
Are most of the people being, you know, removed from the motel? Or is there a deadline date for when people have to be out of there?
A deadline, last I heard, was somewhere in December.
Oh, really?
This year.
It's been extended then, perhaps.
Yeah, more likely, yeah.
I'm wondering, which motel is it, if you want to say?
I'd rather not right now.
No problem. I know there's six of them, I think, or four of them.
Yeah, I'm just trying to keep everybody safe and everything with the pandemic going on and everything.
How are people doing health-wise?
They're good. They're good. They're really good.
Not too many COVID cases?
No.
You yourself are feeling very hearty and hale and all that?
No. I'm staying pretty healthy, though. But I like to talk more, but I am on a mission right now.
I will let you go. We've been talking with
My name is CJ.
Of course, CJ. Thank you, CJ.
You're welcome. Thank you, sir.
All right, man. Spoke with a guy who makes regular trips to the camp. He said that they're usually, a recent trip, he found a handful of needles near trash cans, but not quite in them. And then on occasion, you'll find a sharps container that's been overturned. And I almost never see needles when I go through the Benchlands or San Lorenzo Park. Don't know why that is. Maybe I'm just, intentionally screening out such things, unobservant, but it's very rare that I see that. Maybe I'm looking for people rather than needles, and I should look for both. Who knows? Anyway, that's it for this edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. We'll see what kind of show we can cook up on Sunday, if in fact there is one. I'm kind of taking a slower pace with these shows, and so less intensity, they're less packed, if you will. But, can't guarantee they're going to continue, but I keep coming back to doing it, so we'll see if I show up again on Sunday. Feel free to get in touch. Send me an email to let me know what you think of the show. If there's some particular topics you'd like to see covered, who knows? Maybe I'll pay some attention. Maybe you'll inspire me or kick my ass or something, and we'll get to it. My email address is rnorse@hotmail.com. And while I'm waiting for that outpouring of correspondence, here's another and a closing David Rovix number.
Portland weird, they like to say, but that was over yesterday.
block. They're flipping houses and taking stock. Where's the next place they can transform? Tents and mansions, the new norm. They like TED Talks. They like